Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetcher University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. Whether you're an instructor, therapist, in the business, or have experienced equine-assisted services yourself, we're glad you're here. Join us as we talk about the benefits, the science, to-dos, how-tos, and all of the reasons why what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetcher campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist Katie King.
Welcome to the show, Lucy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell the audience a little bit about what you do for Hetcher and who you are.
Yeah, so my name is Lucy Charbot. I'm the Hetcher grant manager as well as a part-time certified therapeutic riding instructor. So most of the time I'm up in the office writing grants, researching new grant opportunities. I'm responsible for all of the reporting process and then also just building continued relationships with different foundations or other funders. And then once a week, I get to come down here and teach a few adaptive riding sessions.
Very cool. So tell me a little bit about your background and kind of how you ended up as our grant manager.
Yeah, so I have more of an animal science background. At least that's how I started out. So I wanted to become a veterinarian when I was growing up and went the animal science route when I was in college. But I mean, that still was very valuable for what I do today, but eventually kind of figured out I was a little more interested in just the connection between humans and animals. And they call that basically the connection between like the environment, humans and animals is called One Health. And there was kind of like a whole One Health, I guess, sector of study through the Masters of Public Health that I did at UNMC here. So
cool.
That kind of led me into more of the, I guess, more of just like we definitely learned about like health administration, health policy, that kind of stuff. But just learning more about like the actual writing process and the kind of style that goes with grant writing, because we did a lot of like mock proposal type of things. And so when we started doing more of that, I kind of was like considering grant writing as a career route, but it wasn't like my one focus. I kind of looked at, you know, jobs that involved, you know, like research on the connection between humans and animals and things like that. But, you know, way back in the day when I was like, I think in high school, maybe I volunteered at Hetcher for just like a few months. And so I always knew of Hetcher and I was always kind of like searching on their website hoping that a job opportunity would come up. And luckily one did. So, I mean, when the job through Hetcher came up, I definitely didn't feel qualified. But as I got to know everyone at Hetcher, you know, I'm so passionate about like horses and what they can do for people. And I kind of saw my talents as like being a really good fit for what Hetcher needed. And I'm glad that I was right.
Yeah.
That I got the job. And so here I am now. And I've been doing it for, I think, a little over 3 years now.
Very good. And we're so lucky to have you on the team, because since you have joined us, we have been able to focus a lot. You have been able to focus a lot more of your time and energy into some of those funding opportunities so that we can continue to do the programming that we do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you did. So as part of your schooling, you learned kind of this grant writing process and kind of how to finesse it. Right?
Yeah, a little bit. It was more of just like the technical writing skills. So I like a lot of like research style papers, which a lot of that goes into grant writing.
Right.
So a lot of the concepts I learned fit well.
Mm-hmm. So grants can be a little bit of a scary thing, I think, especially for programs that are just getting started or have done a lot of fundraising, but want to get more into this, the grant side of things. What would you say is kind of our breakdown between, you know, how much of what you do and writing grants, and we do a lot of fundraising, and then there's obviously other, you know, funding sources as well. But how heavy would you say grants are for Hetcher?
It's grown to be quite a bit. I don't know the exact breakdown, but I think every year it ends up being like 40 to 50% of our funding comes from grants, and then the rest will come from fundraising and programming.
Yeah.
So it's a good chunk.
Yeah. And I think, I can't remember what episode it was. I'll have to go back and think about that for the audience, and I'll put it in the show notes if I remember. Okay. But Edie had talked some about how we always want to have our funding come from multiple buckets because we never know what grants are going to be available.
Yeah.
And we never know what fundraising is going to do. And so if you're 100% grant funded and you don't get any of those grants or something happens, then you're in a big sticky situation.
Yeah, for sure. Our whole fundraising team really prides ourselves in being more, I mean, especially our individual donors. We have a lot of smaller individual donors. So we don't have like any one donor who can pull out and like we'll lose a whole program or something. And then with grants, like they're definitely larger amounts, but we've definitely been in situations like where we had a large funder that didn't come back, but we still were able to like cover all of our expenses and meet our goals because like we're constantly researching new opportunities. So you just have to constantly be kind of seeing what's out there.
So tell me a little bit about that process. How do you find grants that are good fits for Hetra?
Yeah, so I mean, I was pretty lucky when I came in that Hetra like kept pretty good track of everything we've applied for in the past. And then we already had a pretty good list of like leads. So foundations, organizations were interested in seeing if they would be a good fit. But as far as just finding brand new opportunities, I guess I've done it in different ways. One way is just looking at other, either animal related causes in Omaha or in the Omaha area, or, like other organizations that focus on serving people with disabilities in our area. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times you can go on different nonprofits' websites, and you can probably do this with any nonprofit, no matter where you live, and see like who are their funders, and then maybe can you Google their funders? Can you look up on GuideStar, which is basically a website where you can pull up like a board of directors list and a 990 that shows what other organizations they've funded just in total for the whole year.
And so GuideStar is free, right?
Yes, GuideStar is free. You have to sign up for a login, but it's free. And then from there, you can kind of see, like, what does their grant process look like? Mm-hmm. And it is a little tricky sometimes with more private foundations. Sometimes you just really have to, like, find a connection or, I don't know, even just, like, call them up, send a letter, something like that to introduce yourself, because there are tons of foundations, at least in our area, that don't post their applications online. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to figure out your way around those things and just kind of start looking for connections. Like we look at our board of directors and send them a list of the foundation we're looking at, their board of directors, to see if there are any connections there. And surprisingly, there have been, I mean, I guess not surprisingly because we have a great board, but there have been quite a few, and that's how we found a lot of new connections. But then other ways, I'm sure people have heard of Grant Station or Grant Watch. Those websites, I believe Grant Station you have to buy a membership for, but you, if you're a PATH center, you can get it free through PATH. At least you could earlier this year. So that's definitely something to look into. And I've used Grant Station more than Grant Watch. Grant Watch I've only heard of, but Grant Station, you can search by location and, you can sign up even just for an email list from them, which is free, where they'll send opportunities, and they're separated into like federal grants, national, and then regional. So I suggest, and the way I've found the most success is by looking at regional mostly, because local organizations will probably be more likely to know who you are, or at least know somebody that you work with or who's on your board. Mm-hmm. So definitely a lot of ways you can go.
Yeah.
Go about doing research and finding new opportunities.
And I think too, a lot of times local wants to fund local because we want to see our communities grow and thrive and have those needs be met within our own communities, which is cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So we talked a little bit about how our board and our can help us make connections and that kind of thing. Do you feel like it's something where you have to have a foot in the door? Do you feel like what if you were a smaller organization that, you know, didn't have a large board or were just getting started? Is it okay to just start making applications in the cold and just kind of seeing what happens?
Yeah, I think you need to just get yourself out there because I'm pretty sure we've had different organizations who really knew nothing about us, but you know, they had like one board member who is super interested in equine assisted therapy, or they have like somebody has like a son with a disability or something like that, and they'll learn more about us, or they'll come out and they'll do a tour and they'll be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know like you guys did all this. So, I mean, there's definitely like ways to build connections if you don't already have them. Like somebody out there has the funding and they have like similar passions as you. So it's just a matter of kind of putting yourself out there and finding them.
I think a huge part of that too, that has helped us so much at Hetra, is our ability to tell our story. Mm-hmm. And you do a great job, Lucy, telling our story in a way that connects with people.
Thank you.
Also putting the facts and some of the science behind it too, to kind of prove that what we're doing is working.
Oh yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your process as far as like, you know, starting to write a grant and starting to write our story?
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of like balancing the research and the personal stories, I think like it's going to be different for every single funder. So you definitely need to start out with just, you know, your organization's background. And a lot of times there'll be similar questions across applications. So it's always a good idea to keep like a master list of those common questions so that you're not having to rework the reel every single time.
Exactly.
But once you get to kind of the point where you really need to, you know, convince somebody to fund you, it is just going to depend on, you know, that actual organization. So the questions might already guide you on if you need to include research, but a lot of times if I have the extra space to include research, I definitely do. And you can keep, you know, research articles handy about each of your programs. And, you know, even, you know, the actual citations you can keep in your master list. So that's always good to include. But I actually heard recently on another podcast I was listening to that it actually can be more effective to use storytelling to convince somebody to kind of, you know, join into a cause than research. So
interesting.
And I found that like rarely, if ever, do applications ask for like share a quote from a participant family or like, you know, a story of how one a particular participant has, you know, gained from this program. So I think you just really have to throw those in wherever you can. Like sometimes there'll be options to just have additional comments, but a lot of times there's not. So if you have extra space in just, you know, your description of your program, that's a good place to put that. And we even sent, you know, letters after the fact to different organizations. If the word limit is really small, you know, the worst thing they can do is not read it. But if, hopefully if they get it in the mail and they're interested enough from you, then that's something they'll open up and, you know, they can learn more about you. So always a possibility.
Yeah. And we as Hetra, I mean, we've been around for quite a while and so have learned kind of by trial and error what works and what doesn't. But I think one thing we have found is that through our documentation system and through some other ways that we do things just daily, we're able to pull some of those stats. We're able to pull quotes from families that we've had, and we actually keep kind of a master document of good quotes and things that we use. Do you have any suggestions for people that want to start keeping some of those good stories and using them?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend keeping a master list of those, and I definitely recommend like trying as best you can to update those year after year, because I use those quotes for, and definitely other organizations, I recommend using those quotes for more than just grants. Like you can use them in thank you notes. I mean, you can use them on your website and your social media. So I definitely recommend trying to update those. And it's just, as far as collecting those quotes go, we've kind of trialed and erred different things. Like, we have quite a few people who have, like, actually typed up their quotes and sent them to us. This year, we're trying it differently, where we're actually interviewing the families. So, I'm not 100% sure, you know, which way has worked better so far. But most of the ones I've gotten have actually been from people sending them in, typing on their computer from mm-hmm. us. So those have been, like, great and super inspirational. So far that's worked really well for us.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, just having a good group of, we have great volunteers and mm-hmm. we have great participant families that want to see, you know, obviously Hetcher succeed and their participants succeed, but then also staff too. We have a variety of quotes, I guess you would say, from different perspectives.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So, like, volunteers can have just as inspirational quotes. Like, mm-hmm. and even one way we've done it through our volunteers is, I think we did a social media post that was something along the lines of, like, who's your favorite horse at Hetra? Or mm-hmm. like, why do you love the Hetra horses? Yeah. And we got some great quotes out of that. And, you know, you just have to kind of give people the opportunity to share that, because our volunteers don't come back every single week for no reason.
Right, right.
They love it here, so.
Yeah, and like, as a specific example, I was thinking about, we had done a grant that was for, I don't remember what organization, that's not important, but for kind of a horse of the year type thing, mm-hmm. where you can receive some funds from that. And we used quotes from someone that I think we had asked kind of that specific question was, you know, tell us about your favorite horse. And that was really helpful for us in that grant to write about that horse specifically for a horse of the year. So it has other applications besides just stories that feel good.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
This episode of the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast is sponsored in part by
Equiforce. Equiforce is a database that allows you to track every facet of your organization, from horse, donor, and volunteer management to scheduling, grant tracking, incident reports, and tracking participant progress too. This is not a one-size-fits-all setup. Instead, Equiforce personally works with you to learn how your facility functions and takes note of your specific terminology so that they can create a unique system to match the needs of your organization. And of course, Equiforce provides an ongoing training and support so that your database can grow with you. Visit them at www.equiforce.com. That's EQUI-FORCE.com.
This episode is also sponsored in part by
Wooden Horse Corporation and the Equisizer. The Equisizer is a handcrafted, non-motorized, mechanical horse used by equine-assisted service programs worldwide. The Equisizer requires no electricity, tools, or maintenance and can be used indoors or out for evaluations, warm-ups, stretching, mounting-dismounting practice, and volunteer training, gear, and build confidence with students, clients, and volunteers. It can easily carry the weight of two adults, offering the unique option to ride tandemly. To learn more about the Equisizer, visit equisizer.com. That's EQUICIZER.com.
So do you have any, this is tips and tricks hour with Lucy. So something that makes grants less scary. I think that there's a lot of organizations that don't have someone that is strictly dedicated to grants like you are. So what's something that can help people manage maybe their time or efficiency to get the most bang for their buck with grants?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely keeping the master lists of quotes and then your typical questions. I think in terms of the writing process that I've used over the years, like since I was in high school, and it doesn't apply to just grants, but really for writing anything, is and I don't use an outline for every single question if I already know what I'm going to say, but definitely an outline in terms of just put down bullets of what your ideas are, because so many people I've seen sit at their computer and they want to make like an elaborate, fancy story and they just don't even know where to start. But when it comes to grants, the funder usually only wants you to answer that question. So it doesn't need to be anything fancy. It just has to be clear and concise. So I'd recommend starting with just bullet points And then your sentences, the and a lot of times the word limit or the character counts kind of limit it for you. But just being concise. Yes, that can be really hard. But just being concise in coming across with what you want to say, do it in a lot of times, honestly, doing it in the least amount of words as possible is the best way to really, you know, get the clarity of your ideas across. So you definitely, there comes a time and a place where you want to tell those stories and be inspirational, but in most of the content, you just want to get those questions answered. So
we have to keep in mind too, that those funders are reading hundreds of applications, right? Yes. So it's like as concise, like you said, and clear as you can be in as few words as possible is probably appreciative on their end as well.
Absolutely. And you're not going to be, you know, the perfect fit for everyone, but at least getting straight to the answers will help you figure out which organizations you are a good fit for. So you're doing them a favor and you're doing yourself a favor.
That's right. So word limits, I think, help keep us concise, but can also be difficult to get your point across.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have anybody that helps you kind of filter that or help you review those things? What's your kind of process like as far as that goes?
Yeah. So there have been times when I really have been stuck and just can't get down to those word limits. So I do get feedback off of other people. Rochelle, who's our volunteer coordinator, she's actually a great writer. And so she a lot of times will help me like limit those sentences. Sometimes you just need a different set of eyes.
Right.
And I mean, there are definitely like certain words you can look for, like adjectives. I know we hate to take adjectives out because, you know, we love describing our horses, our volunteers, our staff, how great they are.
Beautiful,
but,
wonderful, fantastic. Yes.
But those can always come out. A lot of people do a lot of that's. Mm-hmm. And those can a lot of times come out. Sometimes just, you know, being really careful about using singular and plural nouns, that can, you know, be really sneaky ways to get your word counts down. So there are definitely all those tricks out there, but you just kind of have to, a lot of times it's just trial and error and getting another set of eyes. So.
Yeah, I think that's really important, is having a different perspective, read it and see what they think.
Oh, yeah.
And all of our grants are reviewed before we submit them and that whole process too, right?
Yeah. So I always write just about everything. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, like Katie has helped me before. Our CEO has done some grants before, but I'll do a majority of them. And then usually we've kind of set a standard of, I think it's any ask above 20,000, we have two people review. So usually that's going to be our CEO and then our my coworker, Kaylin, who she's more in charge of the fundraising side of things, but she has grant experience. So she reviews them. But, you know, it doesn't have to be somebody who's an expert in the nonprofit world or the grant world to review things. You know, it's like any other type of writing. As long as it makes sense to somebody else, you know, another set of eyes have seen it. I think at least one other set of eyes have seen it. I think then you're probably good to go.
I always feel like I need an English teacher to review mine.
No, it would be helpful, but
I can be creative in writing, but I'm not always the most grammatically correct. So tell me a little bit about the after process of grant writing. So we applied for a grant. Yippee, we got our grant. But there's some stuff that happens on the back end that I think sometimes people either forget about or have trouble navigating.
Yeah, it can get complicated depending on who your funder is, but there's almost always, or there should always be, a grant contract that's sent to you. Hopefully you get it right when you learn about the funding, but, you know, sometimes it can take months, weeks. People have different timelines, so a lot of times you'll learn the timeline up front. That's something to always, you know, always good to keep in mind in whatever your recording system is. So we use Salesforce, but definitely whatever your database is of where you keep all of the information on your grants, keep that timeline there so that you know when to expect to hear from people. And then once you do kind of the first thing I look at in the grant contract is there a reporting process? So usually there's usually a final report requirement. If there's not, I always recommend still doing a final report, even if it's something informal that just shares how many participants you served and a quote, great. At least they're hearing from you more than once a year.
Right.
But if there is a requirement, we record our requirements, you know, as far as what is the date for the requirement of the final report and what is needed, because I'm going to have to go to multiple people to get those requirements usually. And then if there's a mid-year report requirement, we'll do the same thing, record that date and, you know, what is needed exactly. So that's kind of the first thing I look at when we get a grant contract. But usually you really want to make sure that you know if you can spend that grant funding as well on like salaries, for example. I find that a lot of foundations now are really open to supporting salaries because staff are so vital to everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not, you want to note that and let, you know, your financial team know or whoever needs to know. And then you also want to make sure you know if there's a matching requirement. So like we just got a grant that will probably be around $500. And then we're going to have to match that grant with our own $500, which we can get from in-kind donations or volunteer time. And, you know, spending money from our general operating budget. Mm-hmm. So you just have to, I'd say those are kind of the big things to look for, like matching funds. Are there limitations like salaries or, you know, overhead costs? And then what is the reporting process? And you can even go in and highlight those in your grant contract, but make sure you understand all of those things before you sign that contract and send it back in. And hopefully you can meet all of those requirements because we all know we need to use all the funding we can get. But if it's really a concern or not a good fit, you know, you can always talk to the funder about it.
Right. So I think Hetra does a good job keeping track of all that stuff. And like you said, we use Salesforce.
Uh-huh.
And we keep track of, you know, everything from when it was, you know, information about the grant, when it was, when the due date, when it's submitted,
uh-huh.
you know, when it's pending, yada, yada. So we also keep track of if we were denied, you know, if we weren't mm-hmm. awarded those funds and, you know, if we weren't and what we applied for. So then if we go to apply the next year or whatever, we know kind of what the story was.
Mm-hmm.
But do funders ever give you a reason why we weren't funded or, you know, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, I think usually I will get some sort of answer on why. Sometimes it's not as detailed as I'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, they say that, at least I heard in one webinar, at least I listened to,
mm-hmm.
that it can take an average of 3 tries to get a funder to actually fund you. So if you're applying to a new organization on the first try, don't expect it to get funded. Expect that. I mean, I would look at that more as a, like, get to know you opportunity and then mm-hmm. give it a few tries. But yeah, usually if we get a denial letter, it says something along the lines of this was a competitive process. You know, we're sorry we couldn't fund your worthy project. But a lot of times you have to follow up to get more of a reason. And I'd say the more local, smaller organizations are more likely to give you a more detailed reason. We've even had like one foundation sit down with us and have like half an hour conversation about like all of the reasons and what we can look at doing for next year. So that's always really appreciated. But there's definitely some out there who won't give you any feedback. A lot of times those are the larger organizations, but definitely ask. It doesn't hurt to ask, especially if you really are kind of surprised by the denial or can't think of a reason yourself. I'd say definitely reach out because that also is another point of contact, another way to, you know, build that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and keep your name kind of in front of them
yeah.
as a reminder for next year.
Yeah, for sure.
So as we're kind of nearing the end of our talk, Lucy, do you have any other takeaways for our audience about this very complicated process sometimes, I think, which we had 30 minutes together to really talk about, but there's so much more we could say. But do you have yeah. any takeaways for our audience?
I just have a couple more things. I mean, I would just emphasize the importance of staying organized and having a grant calendar, because that has been, you know, so helpful for me. Because we have, I'm sure in a lot of organizations as well, have grants that have hard deadlines. We have grants that don't have a deadline. They can be submitted anytime during the year. You have final report deadlines, mid-year report deadlines. So definitely we have online a color coordinated calendar of that through Salesforce, but I also keep track of everything on my personal calendar. And I have a list right in front of me every day of all the ones that are due that month. So just do whatever works for you. You know, some people need it actually like hanging up by their desk or like, you know, on a piece of paper. So figure out what works for you. And then the other thing that I'd say is really important is, even if you're not a direct programming person or you don't have a direct role in your actual programming, like even if it involves volunteering or even watching sessions, like get down to the barn or your arena, wherever your center is, and see those participants in action, because that's such an important part of being able to tell your story and being able to accurately tell your funders, like, these are what the benefits are. And you know that because you've actually seen it happen in the arena. You're not just Googling, what are the benefits of adaptive writing, or getting, you know, answers from another instructor, which is great. You definitely need to rely heavily on all of your programming staff, but there's nothing that compares to being there in person and seeing those stories happen in person. And I think that hopefully comes across in grant writing.
Right. Do you think your process has changed since, because you became a CTRI last year.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think your process has changed from before you were a CTRI to now?
I think a little bit. I think I just am more easily able to tell stories. Like, I didn't have my own stories to tell before I became a CTRI. And now I definitely have, you know, used my own participants, of course, with their permission of everything, mm-hmm. as examples. And then also just going through the CTRI process and through, like, the conference and all that hands-on education, mm-hmm. has really helped me to, like, refine the language I use and just, you know, really know even more of the science behind what we do. So it's been really cool to kind of be on that side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, before I let you go, Lucy, I want to ask you one last question. What is your why? Why do you enjoy your job so much writing grants, and why do you keep doing what you're doing?
Well, so, I mean, my why has more to do with, like, our actual programming itself, because, mm-hmm. you know, writing grants, I just see it as my, you know, my calling in terms of, like, my talent and how I give back to HETRA. But really, it all comes down to, like, the horses and what they can do for us. I feel like growing up, I always felt like animals had more to offer us than, you know, what most people saw, what met the eye. And so, like, just becoming more involved with an organization like HETRA, it's just been so cool to really, you know, meet people who think the same way I do and who are doing more research behind this and just seeing, you know, how this affects the lives of our participants. That's really what it comes down to. So I'm so grateful I could get to be a part of it every day.
Beautiful. Well, we're thankful for your contribution of your gifts and talents to keep
Thank
us going,
you.
Lucy. Okay, everyone, if you want to pick Lucy's brain a little bit more about any of this grant writing process, even how we use Salesforce to track that grant process, if you have any questions at all, head over to hetrauniversity.org and learn a little bit more about our mentorship program. We're happy to talk with anybody and help continue the good that equine assisted services can bring to everyone. So thank you, Lucy, for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There, we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by HETRA University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.